Call this meeting of the Conference Committee for the State Government Finance and Elections Committee to order for today, May 12th. And with that, Ms. Spreck, can you take the roll?
Chair Nelson.
I'm present.
Chair Kiffmeyer.
Present.
Representative Nash.
Present.
Senator Carlton. Representative Greenman.
Present.
Senator Howe.
Present.
Senator Curran. Senator Lang.
Present.
Representative Mason. Representative Zhang.
Present.
Senator Carlson, I think I saw you on here.
Yes, present.
The quorum is present.
Thank you, Ms. Brick. And members, with that, on our agenda today is that we're going to have a discussion similar to what we had yesterday on the restorative justice, but today it's going to be on the PBM reverse auction language that's in the bill. Currently, the language in the bill in both the House and the Senate is pretty close to identical, but there's been some issues since this granted to the committee reports, and so we're going to have some discussions. We have people from both sides here, the proponents of this, from MMB, from the governor's staff, and other people that want to testify on this. So I'm going to start out with Representative Mike Howard. He was the House author. I don't know if Senator Benson's here or not, but Representative Howard was the author. And if you want to please explain what you've been going through the last few days. Mr. Howard, Representative Howard.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I appreciate the opportunity to be before the conference committee to talk about this proposal to utilize a reverse auction. And where I want to start is just the goal of this legislation, which is to save money on prescription drug costs for Minnesotans and to save taxpayers' dollars, truly, which should be a win-win objective and something we know has challenged our state and our people for many years with the escalating cost of prescription drugs. One of the drivers of those higher costs for prescription drugs are the role of pharmacy benefit managers in our prescription drug process. And what this bill seeks to do is leverage innovation and technology really competition amongst these pharmacy benefit managers to deliver a better deal, a better contract, and better health outcomes, really, for Minnesotans. So what this bill would do would use a reverse auction process to secure contract for our members in CGIP, over 100,000 workers. And using this reverse auction process, we believe, based on the experiences in other states, that we can save money on prescription drugs and, frankly, have a better, more accountable process going forward. And other folks will testify in greater detail, but utilizing this technology in New Jersey has saved over $1 billion in healthcare costs, over a 20% decrease in prescription drug costs, for folks in New Jersey. Other states all across the country are utilizing this technology, and Minnesota should join and get ahead of the curve, which is why there's such support to move in this direction. It is truly a win-win, and testifiers will go into greater detail. The chair did highlight that, the language, this has been a bipartisan effort. Language is very similar in the House and Senate. It did arrive semi-late in the session, and as such, we've had conversations since the language was adopted with MMB, who would be the main stakeholder involved in operating this. We've had positive conversations, and we want the same thing, which is a process that is going to deliver the best results for Minnesotans, we aren't totally there in alignment, but we've continued to have conversations and hope that we can find a place where we can move forward, because this bill is one of the key ways that we can reduce the cost of prescription drugs, a goal that we all should share. And with that, Chair, I'd be happy to turn it over to other testifiers who can speak in greater detail to the reverse action process.
Thank you, Representative Howard. And again, I want to give credit to Senator Benson, who's been working hard on this also from the Senate. This is, like Representative Howard said, this is a joint bipartisan, bicameral effort that we're all looking to try and save money for for the state, our taxpayers, by saving money for our employees. Senator Kiffmeyer.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I did check with Senator Benson, but she's in another conference committee this morning, so she can't make it. But on her behalf, obviously very much supporting the PBM reverse auction, and I'm very excited about the possibility that we could get this passed and well supported bipartisanly, which is good news. Thank you, Mr. Chair.
Thank you, Senator Kiffmeyer, Chair Kiffmeyer. I'm going to go a little bit out of order here from the agenda I have in front of me. Mr. Bloom, Mark Bloom from America's Agenda, promoting this. And so, Mr. Bloom, if you want to tell us how you think this is going to work and where you're at with this, Mr. Bloom. And you're muted, sir. And can you identify yourself for the record when you at the beginning of your testimony? Thank
yes,
you.
Pleased to be with you. Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I'm here respectfully not to promote, but to present technical information and information based on our experience. My name is Mark Bloom. I'm executive director of America's Agenda. America's Agenda is a research think tank in the area of healthcare policy. It is labor-led, but it represents labor and employer partnership. Our members include the Teamsters, United Food and Commercial Workers, iron workers, mine workers. We work with public sector unions as well as private sector unions, public and private sector employers, and large healthcare stakeholders. Our goal is very simply to make good healthcare affordable to every American. Since 2011, we have been looking at the issue of PBMs and their role in the pharmaceutical supply chain, because public employers and private employers, in fact, don't buy drugs typically directly from manufacturers. They buy them through market intermediaries, PBMs. They operate in an environment where purchasers have very little understanding of very complex pricing that PBMs offer. In fact, that pricing evolves to become increasingly complex over time. Without the assistance of advanced technology, purchasers are in fact outgunned by PBMs that deploy big data analytics in order to optimize not only prices, but revenues and profits. PBMs are in fact the fastest growing corporate institutions in healthcare in terms of wealth, in terms of stock value. And we felt it was really important to understand the role they had in an environment where prescription drugs are not the largest part of healthcare spend, but certainly the fastest growing part of healthcare spend. The concept of the technology-enabled reverse auction appears in the marketplace in 2011 and 12. It's a fairly mature industry today. There are about a dozen technology operators that run reverse auctions, and several of them very specifically in pharmacy. America's Agenda has worked with public and private employers, with our unions, Fortune 500 companies, and in fact developed the model by which states could adopt this really remarkable technology to drive value. I would like to share with you today an overview, very briefly, of how the process works, based on work we've done with legislators on a bipartisan basis in New Jersey, where we've had 100% legislative support and implementation of two reverse auctions. In New Hampshire, where in fact we had unanimous support in the state Senate, in the House of Representatives, under both Democratic and Republican leadership, and the reverse auction was in fact adopted by legislation and directed for implementation by Republican Governor Sununu. The model was adopted last year in Maryland, and we worked with legislators of both parties, unanimous adoption by the General Assembly there. This year, in addition to Minnesota's consideration of the concept, and we've had the privilege of working with legislators from both parties and with unions who have led in the adoption of the reverse auction in every state we've worked in. We've had the same privilege to work in Colorado, where similar legislation is moving forward this year, and indeed in Louisiana, where legislation was passed unanimously by the state Senate 2 weeks ago. Basically, the problem that the reverse auction is addressing is a problem of PBM pricing, which is very, very complex. In fact, from every drug transaction, PBMs have multiple sources of revenues. As an economist, we call their role in the marketplace arbitrage. Their arbitrageurs operate as intermediaries when purchasers don't know manufacturing prices and manufacturers don't know understand purchasing prices. The intermediary is able to basically buy or administer purchases from a supplier and then resell to the demander. The typical PBM is procured in the public sector through an RFP process. The same process was used in the private sector. I should tell you that largely in, say, the Fortune 500 sector, corporations have moved away from the RFP procurement process with very wide adoption of the PBM reverse auction. It's a mature, established process. Essentially, in the traditional RFP process that's used in most states, a state will put out an RFP, a request for proposals. It's pretty general. PBMs will respond to that request for proposals. Each will bring a different contract term. Each will bring different formularies of prescription drugs. Each will bring very complex and different pricing algorithms. And the state purchaser and its consultant are fairly outgunned technologically. PBMs are bringing big data pricing engines to project their prices and indeed their profit margins. States are generally using much less sophisticated technology, often no more than spreadsheet analysis. And they've got to compare not apples to apples, but very different proposals from PBMs. So in essence, in an RFP process, one PBM is selected as looks like the best deal, and then begins a process of negotiation after the selection in which there is one supplier and the purchaser. The purchaser has very little leverage in that bargaining relationship. Hopefully you make progress and get pretty good terms of a contract, and that's your PBM deal. What we have found since we've implemented the reverse auction, that the mean savings from really good deals that have been negotiated is about 20% of the total spend. Some are higher. In New Jersey, we experienced 25% savings in the first year after a PBM reverse auction. That's a pretty extraordinary rate of savings. In New Jersey, that amounted to, in over a five-year period, $2.53 billion in savings. But it was because of deployment of technology with some pretty specific attributes, which I'll describe briefly to you, but also because we introduced the idea of dynamic market competition. That doesn't really exist in the typical RFP process, because you select one PBM, you're not able to have a competition based on price, which is really knowable because there is no one price. There's a price for hundreds of drugs in your formulary. Each of those prices is changing dynamically over the length of your contract. And you're comparing actually different formularies and different pricing algorithms. So we turn that process on its head. We have a negotiation, but instead of at the end, it happens up front. And here's how it works. The PBM basically posts an invitation to bidders. The purchaser first acquires a technology operator that actually has technology to run a reverse auction, but also to have input from recognized data sources. There are multiple nationally recognized data sources, so they can actually look at not only current, but the trajectory of prices from reputable data sources. Then, with the assistance of the technology operator, the purchaser develops a best-in-class contract. Those contracts are turned into granular yes-no answers, digitalized surveys, in which a PBM has to accept the contract terms that have been decided by the state purchaser. This is where the state really exercises its flexibility and its power. It actually defines the contract terms. It doesn't negotiate them with the PBM per se. It actually defines the terms it wants. PBMs are required to accept each contract term granularly as a condition for being allowed to participate in the PBM reverse auction. PBMs are allowed to ask questions and answers. That, in a sense, is a negotiation. I could give you better terms if you could change this term of your contract. But if that's done transparently, and if the state makes that change for one PBM, it must make it for all the PBMs. Again, a very different process from the original RFP. After PBMs have been qualified, I should indicate that it's not only the quantitative prices that go into the reverse auction, but qualitative considerations. Is there an adequate network? Does the PBM have the capacity to actually deliver on its bid? Those are qualitative values that are given mathematical weights and put into the formula. So in the reverse auction, again, a ranking of financial bids, but also a ranking of financial with qualitative considerations, but they're built in not on the basis of opinion, but on the basis of an algorithm, a mathematical algorithm. All of that is done, and then the PBM reverse auction begins. PBMs are now bidding still very complex price bids, but to fulfill the specific terms of the state's contract, the big data analytics engine is brought to bear to actually project out in real time, 1 to 6 hours. The PBM can actually project out the cost to the state of a PBM's very complicated bid for an entire formulary, assuming the utilization patterns of your state, expected rates of inflation, and the formulary that you have chosen, not the formulary that the PBM prefers. Project out the cost. Now, here's the real trick. The state can see the projected cost of each PBM's bids, but PBMs can see the state's projected cost of their competitors' bids. Close down a round of bidding. 2 weeks later, you have a second round of bidding. PBMs come in and they've jiggered their algorithms over the last 2 weeks. They've gamed their bids to try and underbid one another. And through multiple rounds of bidding, PBMs have to outsmart one another, underbid one another to drive down price. Now, our theory was that it's very difficult for a state to out-negotiate a PBM with games of the PBM's devising. That is, how much of the rebate will I pass through? How much will I charge in administrative fees? How much in clinical fees? How much in copay maximizers? How much in rebate aggregators? Various income drivers of the PBM, very complex, very difficult to out-negotiate them. Even if you have a good contract, the using of technology to create a dynamically competitive marketplace, we theorize, would be a more powerful cost reducer than a state and its consultants' best attempt to out-negotiate a PBM that, after all, has outgunned the state in technology and is setting the rules of the negotiation. So our theory was that the market competition can work, and indeed we found it is driving down on average 20% reduction in overall costs. At the end of that process, there is really not much left to negotiate. The negotiation happened out front when PBMs accepted the terms to come in to the into the reverse auction. Their bids populate the contract. The contract can actually be printed out, populated by the term the bids of the PBM. That's a very difficult transition to make if you're a traditional RFP provider. In New Jersey, I should tell you that New Jersey actually tried to negotiate with the winning PBM. It demanded terms that weren't initially in the contract. PBM acceded in its negotiation after the bid was awarded, and a court found that that wasn't fair to the other bidders and ruled that the contract would remain in place, but the bidding had to be redone, not because of a failure of the reverse auction process, but because of the failure of the state to understand that the negotiation happened up front. It exercised its power in setting the terms of its own contract, that negotiating after the contract actually was unfair to the PBM bidders who assumed that the criteria that they had been told would be applied to selecting the PBM. So indeed, the state redid its PBM reverse auction. It in the first contract achieved a $1.6 billion savings. They redid and did a second reverse auction 2 years later, extended its savings over two.
Hey guys, show the way, we're late. Pulling up.
Sorry.
Sorry about that. So somebody was not muted. If you can kind of wrap up. So
sure.
We can get to
I'll conclude here. Thank you. Thank you very much. So in conclusion, we theorize that same technology platform could be used not only to run the reverse auction, but because it had already been programmed with the state's best contract terms and with the financial bids of the winning agreement, it could be reused to adjudicate the PBM invoices when they came in every 2 weeks or every month. These are multi-million dollar invoices. States typically don't audit. I understand Minnesota hasn't done an audit in a number of years. The states that do it best audit annually, and even then, it's a sample audit. About 3% of invoices are sampled. Our theory was that the PBM platform, technology platform, could actually review, do a quasi-audit that is 100% review of claims for compliance with the contract every time an invoice came in. While the money was still in the treasury, you could validate where a PBM invoice deviated from the terms of the contract that you'd awarded through the reverse auction. And indeed, we found we were right. In New Jersey, $42 million in overcharges were recovered in the first year. That is phenomenal. That contributed to $2.53 billion in savings. The final word I will say is on specificity. I've heard some concern about specificity. The specificity in Minnesota is pretty much the same as the specificity that's been in the RFPs and in the legislation in each of the states. It is very technical. These are specifications that are minimum standards. They're required for technology that could actually do the job. But these are also extremely permissive bills in the sense that what goes into the contract is entirely determined by the state, unlike a traditional RFP where the PBM actually proposes the contract. The state also has the right to modify and customize its agreement. Qualitative concerns, even opinions, can be built in to the reverse auction technology platform, but those have to be done upfront and transparently so the PBM bidders all understand what criteria will be applied to their selection. So thank you very much for the time to explain how the process works, Mr. Chairman, and I'll be delighted to answer any questions if they should come up in testimony.
And Representative Nash, I see you have your hand up.
Yes, thank you, Mr. Chair. And Mr. Blum, if you could, you know, you've shared the New Jersey savings, sure. And I am a huge proponent of reverse auctions, having in my private sector job been a vendor using them, and they do work quite effectively for the end user. Walk us through what kind of is modeled, and perhaps this is better for Representative Howard, but based on the New Jersey deployment of the tech, what are you figuring the potential savings to the state of Minnesota? Because I'm sure that had to be part of your scoping of this potential project. What is the potential savings for the state of Minnesota? Because as I've heard it, it's quite profound, and I would be stymied why anybody would be against saving the state money. So if you would, thank you.
And yeah. Mr. Blom.
Yes, Mr. Chairman and Representative Nash, thank you. Specifically, it's not only our projections. A study was done in New Hampshire by the Josiah Bartlett Public Policy Institute when they were considering their reverse auction. And they looked at reverse auctions in the public sector generally, and they also looked at public sector PBM reverse auctions, which are an extremely technical version because pricing is so complex. And they found that the mean savings is 20% of the total prescription drug spend. Based on our analysis in America's Agenda, we subdivided that in this way. You've done a good job in negotiating your contract with CVS. I just want to commend MMB and its team for the work they've done. But it actually isn't the improvement in contract terms that drive the savings. It's the competition between PBM bidders. Remember, in the RFP process, when you begin negotiating with your selected PBM, there are no other bidders. You're just in a room with one PBM. You don't have a lot of leverage in that relationship. In the reverse auction, PBM bidders have to underbid one another transparently. I mean, it's public what the valuation of each of their bids is. They have to outsmart each other. You don't have to outsmart them. And so we found that dynamic competition, typically in a market with comparable contracts, improves the state savings by about 15%. And the remaining 5% is how much better you make your contract. So the best negotiator still can't capture the level of savings that you get through the reverse auction. In summary, 20% is what we see mean in 2019 and 2020 from reverse auctions in fairly large entities, public sector, as well as in private sector corporations. And about 15% of that we project comes from the dynamic competitive marketplace that's been created by this technology that doesn't exist in a reverse, in a typical RFP process.
Representative Nash.
Yeah, thank you, Mr. Chair. And again, Mr. Blum doesn't know this, but I work in the technology industry, and technology is an enabler. It creates a more level playing field, and it accelerates change and it accelerates innovation. And having been a part of these many, many years ago and all the way through my career, I see the utility, I see the value, I see that dynamic competition is tremendous. And having sat in what we called the war room at the company that I was working at, we had walked in the door with an idea of how low we would go. And we got pushed across that line a number of times because we wanted to win the contract. And what we found was that we ultimately were wrong when we thought, oh, we couldn't possibly stay afloat if we bid this. Turns out we could, because we had to do it better, faster, and ultimately cheaper. So both parties won. The client that chose us won. But we also did, because we secured a nice book of business for ourselves. And that's where technology being an accelerator and bringing in that that benefit. And ultimately, it's a benefit for the people who take advantage of this. It's a benefit for the state. And what I found also was that it made the delivery of services to the end user more nimble. So that the person who is obtaining these prescription drugs also found that their service level went up. One, because their expectations were defined walking in, and that they understood that the value was tremendous, and they walked in with a very different mindset. So is that what you have found, Mr. Blum, also in the New Jersey deployment of this?
We have, because, you know, the reports – Representative Nash, Mr. Chairman, if may I respond?
Yes, Mr. Blum, go ahead. And if you can keep your answers shorter, we got other questions we need to get to.
Yes. With each bid, a report is issued. It's actually an automated report because the technology that meets the specs in your legislation, other states' legislation, enables technology to produce an automated report. The report will not only give you the overall price, but breaks down the price into the components in the PBM bidders bid. So you can look at pricing in categories of specialty drugs, of generic drugs, of brand drugs. Ultimately, that data becomes really valuable as over the course of the lifetime of your contract, you can start to bore down on specific cost drivers within your overall formulary buy with a level of focus and specificity that was previously impossible. So indeed, your as a user, your capacity to drive further savings and to optimize your spend is enhanced by using this kind of technology.
And Mr. Chair, just briefly.
Representative Nash, briefly, please.
Yeah, very briefly. And thank you, Mr. Blum. It was that granular data that I'm trying to drive at the value of this, because working with big data, the more you have and the more granular you can get, the future savings can also be driven down based on the analysis of what's been purchased, what's been utilized, but also the trend lines and how you can really take advantage of that. So I was pleased to support this on the floor for Representative Howard. I think this is, if we want to look at our session right now, this is a great way to save money for the state and the taxpayer and deliver services at a greater rate. I'm not sure why we're having to haggle over these things, because to me, this is a complete no-brainer. And thank you, Mr. Chair.
Thank you, Representative Nash. Senator Carlson. And then we're going to go on to the next testifiers, the Commissioner of MMB and Administration. Senator Carlson.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I have two questions, and I'll ask them both at the same time because they may be related. The first is, Mr. Blum, you mentioned a $40 million recovery from overcharges, and you were speaking about New Jersey, and I'm wondering if that was New Jersey, and how was that discovered, and where did that come back, and was that an error? Just where that is. And then my second question is, how much detail, as you go through the stages here, how much detail is shared with the bidders? Do you go down into individual pharmaceutical prices? What's the detail that they are now competing under?
Yeah. Great. Mr. Blum, and if you can keep your answers a little shorter, yeah. I think if I let you talk, you could talk for the whole 3 hours, and we have other testifiers. Mr. Blum.
Yes, Mr. Chairman. Thank you for that guidance. I'll be very brief. The detail that's shared with the bidders is essentially the cost, the projected cost to the state of their entire bid. It's not much more granular than that. The detail that's provided to the purchaser, however, is very detailed. So the other question, what was the other question?
Senator Carlson.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. It's on the $40 million recovery. Yes.
Good.
Mr. Blum.
There were several components of the $40 million recovery. Some were drugs that were actually fulfilled that were not on the formulary at some margin to the PBM. Some were just simple mistaken applications of prices. I will just say this. I am not insinuating that there was any wrongdoing or intentional deception, but we have to understand this, that you're going to be tightening up in very granular terms your contract to digitalize it than it was before. There's a lot of discretion in a typical PBM contract that is negotiated without the benefit of technology. So PBMs, when they program their legacy big data computer systems, have a greater than, lesser than logic. If there's discretion, they will always move towards the greater than within a range of discretion, because there's more profit in that. So if you see systematically built into a program greater than logic in a traditional PBM process, and now a PBM has to comply with a much more disciplined contract, it is very difficult for them to turn the ship around quickly. And so you often see large overcharges just because the PBM can't accommodate the terms of the new contract initially. What we do see also dynamically, and now we have almost a decade, is that PBMs have less and less overcharge as time goes on, because you have a technology watchdog actually reviewing and validating every invoice. And so PBMs have a really strong incentive to weed out the programmed drivers of what become overcharges in a PBM, in a technology-enabled reverse auction.
Senator Carlson?
Yes, one quick follow-up here. You mentioned states that do it best audit annually. Is that a recommendation?
Mr. Blum?
There's a legal requirement that you audit an audit has a legal meaning. You can audit annually, but remember, audits are at best only samples, because it's impossible to audit 100% of the claims using traditional auditing techniques. Rather, what we recommend is that you electronically do 100% of claims review at least quarterly. An auditor can't do that, but technology is a tool by which you can do it if it meets the specifications that are gratefully in your current legislation.
Thank you, Mr. Blum. The next person I have is Commissioner Showalter. And Commissioner Showalter, again, introduce yourself for the tape and then proceed. And when you're done, I'll have Commissioner Roberts Davis, and then we can get in some questions and answers back and forth.
All right.
Mr. Showalter.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, members. For the record, my name is Jim Showalter, Commissioner of Minnesota Management and Budget. Happy to be with you here today. I wanted to start by thanking Representative Howard and Senator Benson for bringing this idea forward. It is a place where there's a lot of discussion and a lot of opportunity, and I think it's pushing us towards a place that we have the same objectives. That is to save money on our prescription drug spend and our healthcare spend generally. It is a place where we're trying to innovate and do new things. And it is a place where it is obviously complex. Anybody who's been listening to the last 30 minutes of testimony understands that we are only scratching the surface of the algorithm, the data, the shifting prices, the rebates, the lack of transparency that is legion in our prescription drug market. This is a way to try to cut through that. I appreciate Representative Nash's comment that in some ways this seems like a no-brainer. I got to say, I'm disappointed and frustrated that I'm testifying right now raising concerns rather than telling you how we've come to an agreement. Using the reverse auction to select the PBM is a relatively new idea. Unlike the previous testifier, from states' perspective, this is a relatively new idea in the pharmacy marketplace, and it's a direction that states are turning to find savings for program participants. Program participants, just a step back, that's CGIP. That's the State Employee Group Insurance Program, which many legislators and the staff also participate in. And it manages the insurance benefits for more than 130,000 employees and their families. This includes all three branches of state government, as well as quasi-state agencies. So how do we do this? You know, as stated in prior testimony, we're interested in exploring options to engage in reverse auction process when we do our contract to procure our next PBM. This bill did arrive late in session, and we have not reached agreement with proponents of this legislation. What we're really looking for here is we're seeking to ensure the statutory language is not overly prescriptive. It allows for permissibility after the first contract cycle, and supports competition for both the selection of the technology platform vendor to run the auction, as well as the selection of the pharmacy benefit manager. In short, we want to make sure that this process works for Minnesota. Minnesota has engaged in reverse auction procurement in the past, and these experiences are shaping our analysis for the proposed use. And I want to be clear, even without any changes, CGIP could do a reverse auction procurement process for its PBM. CGIP has started learning about this process early this summer. The team began researching and evaluating applicability to Minnesota. We've had the opportunity to work with consultants and colleagues in other states to begin an assessment of how this reverse auction might look with our members in our program. New Jersey, one of the first adopters of this process, engaged in contracting methods successfully. Totally agree. Several other states have adopted this procurement process or in the process of doing so. While we're looking at that, we're trying to make sure we're learning from our colleagues to make sure that we're doing the appropriate measures of due diligence and caution and anticipate some of the problems that they have run into, as optimism can sometimes lead to higher expectations or problems down the line. While we believe that Minnesota can purchase a PBM with a reverse auction and save money, we're not as confident about the numbers that the previous testifier said, but we want to try. Our contracts are tightly written. We get 100% of our rebates. Just want to point that out, 100% of the rebates. That's a significant portion of that play in pricing and in the prescription drug market. We believe we will save money regardless of whether we do a reverse auction when we do come out to market, but we're going to try. What we want to do is make sure we have the ability to run a reverse auction to maximize savings. And we've been trying to work with proponents of the legislation to develop language that sets us up for that process. We first suggested some changes to the language back on March 31st. We just got some responses. And here are the issues that we're trying to work through. We feel that much of the language is overly prescriptive and limits our ability to negotiate the best deal possible. Here's an example. Specific provisions of the language we believe will limit competition. In our research, we found three large vendors that perform reverse auctions. Based on some of the language contained in the bill, at least one of the vendors would right out of the gate be disqualified. Limiting competition isn't good for our members, and we're continuing to advocate for less restrictive language to ensure that we have the largest pool of competitors to drive the price down. When New Jersey solicited bids, only one vendor responded, causing an increased price to their members. We don't want to repeat this scenario. In Subdivision 4 language, it sets a specific point in time when a platform vendor contract must be completed, only serves to give the vendor the power to demand a higher price. If they know MMB must contract by a specific date, a vendor can delay negotiations and get what they want. We have no option but to acquiesce. This is a new application for reverse auctions, and we're concerned that overly prescriptive statutory language might be too specific now and not leave flexibility for changes in the delivery of services in the future. Many of the provisions outlined are valid for the RFP that we will issue to procure technology vendor for the reverse auction when we issue it in the coming months, but may be severely limiting the next time we engage in the contract for a PBM in 3 to 5 years. We recognize there's going to be change and growth, and we don't want our statutory mandates to hinder competition or future performance. This statute will hold us back from getting the best deal possible now and in the future. So while we're trying to go in the same direction, we need to make sure that the statutory direction is flexible and works for us both today and in the future. Additionally, the House position contains changes to how MMB engages with our labor partners in reviewing RFPs. The current Joint Labor Management Committee on Employee Insurance is working well. We work closely with the JLM, as it's known, and that includes union representation on the selection of all our major contracts. Adding the language requiring JLM participation is disruptive to that process and may create some unintended consequences because of issues of confidentiality. Finally, I would suggest a report on the outcome be included in the legislation, and we still think that's a good idea. We want to share with the legislature how the process is working and evaluate based on our experiences if this is the best system for Minnesota. But as countered by proponents for the legislation, this report would be done by the contracted vendor with working with the OLA to submit the final report. We believe it is appropriate for MMB to evaluate the data and write the report on behalf of our members. A vendor would not be a disinterested, neutral party, and they'd have a vested interest in demonstrating savings to ensure continued contractual relationship. There's agreement on conducting a reverse auction amongst the House, the Senate, MMB. In fact, we don't need this legislation to engage in that contract, but this is an important conversation. We appreciate pushing forward. What I can't say is we cannot agree to statutory mandates that sets up MMB for possible failure and the inability to walk away from this type of contracting in the future if it doesn't turn out to save our members money. We need statutory language that puts the state in the best possible position to enter into contracts with both the platform vendor and the PBM with the broadest opportunities for competition. As the previous presenter said, what we're trying to get is competition. We want to maximize that competition. In short, that's been our goal. It's the reason why we can't support the language that's been presented today, but we're continuing to work on it. I have to say I am, as Representative Nash suggested, saddened and frustrated that we aren't able to say we've got a solution here at this point in time. But appreciate the direction and appreciate the opportunity to testify you, Mr. Chair and members.
Thank you, Commissioner. Next we'll have Commissioner Roberts Davis. Welcome to the committee. State your name for the record, and you know the gig. I'll proceed with your testimony.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Members, can you hear me okay?
We're getting a real feedback, an echo.
Is that right? Okay. Let me try this again. Now?
Speak again. We can hear you, but I'm still getting a feedback.
I can't hear you now.
Oh.
Can you come back to me?
Yeah, we can come back to you because we're getting a feedback. Like you got two microphones going at picking it, microphone speaker picking up each other, and reverberating. Senator Kiffmeyer, did you have a question, or are you just you're peeking up to listen?
No, Mr. Chair, on the same issue, if you're using a headset and you don't unplug it or turn it off, that microphone will give feedback.
And I know other people have had trouble when they switch from headphones to not headphones. You've got to go in and change some settings in your computer, but I've been told when people. While Ms. Davis is getting that worked out, Commissioner Showalter, I got a couple questions that come to my mind. You said that we currently have the ability to do reverse auctions under current statute, that we don't necessarily need to pass this legislation to do this. Mr. Showalter, you're muted, sir.
We've gone from too many echoes to too few. Mr. Chair, members, that is right. I've been advised that, you know, we have the flexibility in running the program to pursue a reverse auction strategy for our prescription drugs purchasing, absent this legislation. So, you know, if we're not able to work it out, we still have the ability to pursue this direction. As other states are experimenting and looking at it, you know, this is a contracting method that we could use help our members get lower prescription drug prices. As I think the Commissioner of Administration will testify, you know, reverse auctions is not a completely new process. We see it in other markets as well. And so there are abilities to pursue this direction.
And Commissioner, the other question I have is the length of this contract. And I'm concerned, I share your concern that if we pass this legislation, that on the front end, we get it right so that we don't lock ourselves into something that doesn't give us the savings. But how long is this contract? And I think you said something 3 years and 2 years. I've heard 5 years. How long would the initial contract be, Commissioner?
Mr. Chair, I believe it's 3 years. I'm going to see if anybody sends you a message to see if I'm wrong. But you're absolutely right. I think one of the key things about the prescription drug market is the turnover and the changes. It is big money. It is big data. It is personal. There are a lot of changes going on in that. And the bottom line is we want to make sure that we stay nimble and learn. I think the challenge for us is not doing that. That would be a problem for us. The contract that we would be pursuing is 2 years with three possible one-year renewals. So making sure that we stay current and have that flexibility is important to us.
And Commissioner, I guess the last question I've got that I wrote down here, why do we need to get this right this year? If you're talking, if we're talking that the current contract doesn't expire till the end of next year, why do we have to get the front end part right this year if we pass this legislation? Commissioner.
Mr. Chair, members, it is important that as we go into looking at our PBM contract and consider changes to our PBM arrangements, that we have the ability to take time, because these PBM contracts can be very disruptive to our members. Making these kinds of changes, address both the pricing, the formulary, the choices that we're talking about with our members. And so we want to make sure we've got adequate time to make a transition so that it works for everyone, all of our 150,000 members who are served by CGIP.
Ms. Roberts, Davis, are you on now?
I think so, Mr. Chair. Can you hear me?
We can hear you fine now.
Nothing like a technology malfunction when you're talking about technology. I apologize. Thank you for your patience.
Ms. Roberts Davis, I always like to tease our IT people, like Representative Nash or other members that are supposedly in the technology business when they have trouble with their technology. It's always fun to pick at them. But anyway, Ms. Davis, proceed.
Thank you so much, Mr. Chair and members. For the record, I'm Alice Roberts Davis, Commissioner of the Minnesota Department of Administration, and I'm here to echo a large part of what Commissioner Showalter has said this morning. Admin also agrees that reverse auctions can be a very useful procurement tool in certain situations, and we have used them extensively in the past as well. We have shown that they are very successful with commodities. If we are purchasing widgets and it's something that has clear specifications, it's something that is a small procurement with limited complexity and it's got specific specifications. However, it has not worked well with large procurements with complex professional services or contracts that have unique specifications or many variables. And so we do have concerns about using the reverse auction for this PBM procurement, and we have had instances where using a reverse auction for a technical or a services contract has been unsuccessful because, as Representative Nash pointed out, sometimes companies do push themselves across a line where they shouldn't financially, and in their instance, it worked out well, but in other instances, companies are not able to deliver, and I think that for that reason, MMB has proposed some amendments to the language that would protect the state and taxpayers when the reverse auction does not produce a successful procurement, whether it's that we don't have enough bidders or there is some bidder's remorse on behalf of the vendors who do participate. And so we would not oppose the reverse auction if MMB's amendments were included. And Mr. Scheer, that concludes my remarks.
Thank you, Ms. Roberts Davis, Commissioner. Representative Nash, you've got your hand up.
I do. Thank you, Mr. Chair. To Commissioner Showalter. Commissioner, in your testimony, you intimated, I counted three times, that you apparently have concerns with PII being leaked out. Are these, and that's personally identifiable information, but Are you saying, because I don't believe that you are, but are you saying that you think that the reverse auction process is going to expose people's personal information? Are these companies not subject to HIPAA laws, or are you saying that something beyond that is going to happen?
Commissioner Showalter.
Mr. Chair, Representative, no, this is about confidentiality and business formulas. This is not about PHI. So any suggestion that this is about PHI is, I want to make sure that that's not your impression.
Okay, and then Mr. Chair, real quick.
Nash.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Commissioner, I don't know if you follow the Blue Ribbon Commission on IT. I serve on that. Senator Curran serves on that. In that, the reports that we have created is a strong admonition, also supported by the governor, to not build but buy software. And if this is already available, you said you would have to go back and rework some of our own, which would be a building process. That seems completely contrary to what the BRC is saying. But if we've got something that is out there available right now, that is to take a higher priority than taking something that we don't have or might have and build it ourselves. So, I mean, that seems utterly and completely contrary to the direction that the governor's Blue Ribbon Task Force on IT has set forth as a direction. So I find your concern a little bit specious in that regard, because I think that if we have a piece of software that exists out there in New Jersey, which I would remind members, we tout ourselves as being innovators and on the leading edge. Do we really want to be beaten by New Jersey? I don't. But Commissioner, the software issue is of concern to me, because I have seen fiscal notes for tweaking UI software for paid sick and family leave, which is an outrageous and bloated cost that we were told by Minute couldn't be done. So I'm just concerned that you want to lean on something that doesn't truly exist within the state of Minnesota and have it ultimately go toes up, which I'm sure it would. Or we have something that's being utilized out there in the market space right now that has delivered benefits to the state of New Jersey. Again, harping on New Jersey, let's be better than them. Let's use this. Let's get it done.
Commissioner Showalter.
Mr. Chair, Representative, I really appreciate that question, because, it's important for you to walk away from this hearing and understand where we're at. Just so you know, we would contract with a vendor for the platform. Yeah, we have no intention of asking Minute or MMB staff to build this kind of IT platform. I agree fully with where the BRC is going, and our team would definitely not try to undertake that. We think that this technology is available. They would do it and be better for arranging that. We want to make sure we have the contract terms so that we can get that vendor contract procured properly with the best price possible for Minnesota. So the strategy is exactly what you would expect coming out of your conversations with the BRC.
Chair Kiffmeyer. I see you were trying to put your hand up, and I think you were clicking on the wrong button. That was the clapping hands was up there and kept dropping off. But Senator Kiffmeyer.
Yes, thank you very much. I couldn't figure out. So I finally got in a little closer and realized the raised hand was on the bottom of that. We use a little different tool when we do ours. So at any rate, I'm glad to hear, Commissioner Showalter, that you're not looking to build internal software. I had a moment of panic there, as I thought that might actually be considered, especially after the experiences of Minlars and other such things. This would not only be bad in that regard, but the effect upon employees would be tremendous. So I'm glad to hear you affirm that that is not the case. The question I have for you, Commissioner Showalter, you're stating that right now and before, you could have done the reverse auction, and even without this legislation, you could do it. My question is, why haven't you?
Commissioner Showalter.
Mr. Chair, Madam Chair, this is learning. We keep on getting better. We're trying to learn how to do these things, and manage the program better. There's only a handful of states that have already done this, and we hope to figure out how to take advantage of it ourselves. Fortunately, once in a while, these conversations help us all learn and see and get more information. That is where we're at. You know, this is our first opportunity since this last contract with CVS, where we have a chance to sort of sit back and say, well, what is the market at, and where might we go? So, Madam Chair, this is a bill and a conversation that's at the right time, and we will figure out how to make sure we save our members the most money.
Commissioner Davis, did you want to comment on that or answer that on that question?
Mr. Chair, members, I don't think that I have anything additional to add. Thank you.
Thank you, Commissioner. Chair Kiffmeyer.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. So I am also following up on, I do think that legislative input into decision-making is very valuable. We all draw from a broad and deep depth, as you heard from other members just on this conference committee, what they bring to the table to benefit the decisions and things that we're doing. And I think that's an important consideration from statewide to all kinds of job backgrounds and other things. So that's important. One of the things was the you mentioned in particular, overly prescriptive. I've read through this, and I've read through your amendment, which, by the way, is quite overly amending our language in a lot of details. What's overly prescriptive in your definition?
Commissioner Showalter.
Mr. Chair, Madam Chair, I know our staff has walked through those specifics with you and other members at least once, if not multiple times. Happy to do that again, because there are a number of specific language changes that I mentioned in testimony. We've got the language changes that we've been asking about for several months. And bottom line is, we're trying to make sure we've got some flexibility in a number of different places so that we can contract with the most competition available to get the best deal. This is obviously a incredibly complex transaction, an incredibly complex process of a reverse market on buying prescription drugs. Our staff is trying to get into the details as much as possible to learn from other states, and that's why we've got those amendments there. We're also working with our colleagues at Admin, as Commissioner Roberts Davis has suggested. We have entered these kinds of contracts before, and just want to make sure that the legislation both works today and going into the future.
So, Mr. Chair?
Chair Kiffmeyer.
Yeah, what I'm kind of gathering sometimes is that you are more concerned about the overly prescriptive, as you use in your definition here, going into the future. Is that correct?
Commissioner Showalter, I think what she's asking, are you more concerned about the front end of flexibility or the back end flexibility of the contract? Because if we're going into this, what we do in the beginning, next year we could come back if there were some issues about the back end that we could fix, or we could have legislation to fix that next year. Are you more concerned about the front end or the back end of the contract? Commissioner Showalter.
Mr. Chair, Representative, Senator, the answer is both. We have concerns about this initial procurement to make sure that we've got the most competition available. We have concerns about how this might mature so that we can continue to get the best deal and ultimately get information back to you as chair to understand how this is working and how we can keep on learning. There are really two RFPs here that we're talking about. One is for the platform, the technology platform that Representative Nash was referring to, and one for the PBM. And we want to make sure that we arrange both successfully.
That's all my questions. Thank you, Mr. Chair. That's all my questions for right now.
Members, is there any question? Anybody else have questions right now for either Mr. Blum or the commissioners or their staff? Then we have other staff here that might be able to answer questions. I see no hands jump up. The next person on my list, I have Mr. Devin Bruce. Please identify yourself for the tape and then proceed with your testimony.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And just to head off any questions, can you hear me all right?
Yes, we can.
Perfect. Thank you, Mr. Chair, members. My name is Devin Bruce. I'm the Public Affairs Coordinator for the Minnesota Association of Professional Employees. We're a union of over 15,000 state workers all across state agencies, boards, and commissions. As I've already testified a little bit in a previous committee, just very briefly on this provision, I'll try and keep it very brief. rising healthcare costs and out-of-pocket expenses for prescription drugs are a huge concern for our membership. With promising results in other states, we believe that the reverse auction provides an open and competitive process for selecting the PBM based on the formulary that we negotiate as bargaining units with our employer MMB and CGIP, and it'll help realize significant savings to our members and to the state. Two brief things I really want to highlight that I haven't previously is first the real-time claims adjudication and price auditing provided by the vendor platform to ensure that our members are not being overcharged by pharmacies or wrongfully denied coverage by a PBM. This is a place where I think all parties agree is kind of necessary to build into our current process. And in fact, MMB just put out an RFP a couple weeks ago for this exact purpose. This functionality that's built into the vendor platform can help save the state and our members time and money in chasing down and contending prescription drug costs with PBMs and pharmacies. Second is the language concerning the Joint Labor Management Committee on Health Plans. Through our contract language, the JLM works closely with management to help design the formularies, select the network, review the RFP process for selecting the PBM. And I wholeheartedly agree with Commissioner Showalter that we have a great process right now that we work with management on. And Pat Arsenault, who is also currently on the call, who's the labor co-chair of the Joint Labor Management Committee, can go a little bit more in depth on labor's role in the process. But we've talked also with the chairs and the bill authors on some clarifying and technical amendments, which aren't being brought today. But to clarify, codifying the JLM's role only ensures that the bargaining units are also able to participate meaningfully in the platform vendor selection process, as well as the claims adjudication process, which is being slightly altered in under this bill. So that we also have a seat at the table to make sure that our members get the best possible outcomes that I think both us and the state agree. We hope that you consider adopting this proposal and with our technical amendments, and we thank you for your time, and I'm happy to answer any questions.
Thank you, Mr. Bruce. Go to the next testifier, Ms. Pat or Pat Arsenault. I hope I said that right. If you want to say your name for the tape and proceed.
Thank you, Mr. Chair and members. My name is Pat Arsenault, and I am staff with the Interfaculty Organization, the union that represents the faculty at the state universities. I just want to briefly say that we are wholeheartedly in agreement with this provision that's being proposed to codify the JLM participation in this process. As the commissioner said, the state has a vested interest in their good relationship and continuing relationship with labor. We, of course, also have a vested interest in our continuing relationship with management. And if we thought that this language would somehow disrupt what the JLM does, we would not support it, right? If we in any way thought that this would change the way we are participating, we would not be supportive. And we are supportive of the provision on JLM participation. So because we do think that it just codifies what we do, and it just ensures with these new processes that we will have a seat at the table and that we will continue the way we do operate in JLM. And I'll just end it there because of time. And if there's any questions on how the JLM operates, I'll just hold for questions. Thank you.
Thank you, Ms. Arsenal. The next person I have on my list is Ethan Vogel. And please identify yourself for the record and proceed.
All right. Good morning, Mr. Chair, Conference Committee members. My name is Ethan Vogel. I'm Legislative Director for AFSCME Council 5. As I have said before, we share the concerns which have been expressed by MMB and the Department of Administration throughout the legislative session. We have concerns with this policy as written, and we hope more flexible language is adopted if this provision is to be included in the Conference Committee report. Though this concept has been successful in the state of New Jersey, one state is not a great sample size. There has been no evidence or analysis presented to correlate the costs per enrollee between Minnesota and New Jersey prior to their implementation of this policy or afterward for that matter. The experience of New Jersey should be considered, of course, but if we're going to use their success as the primary rationale for moving this policy forward as written, we should also have an actuarial analysis of some kind to compare our two states. As was mentioned, in the case of New Hampshire, they had such a study. If this policy moves forward, we don't know how much it will save, and we don't know how much the vendor will cost. The goal should be to make the bidding for the vendor and the PBM as competitive as possible. If we do not increase the competition on the vendor side, we will likely overpay in our pursuit to find savings. And the first 12, 15, who knows how many millions of dollars in savings will go right back out the door. So to increase competition, you should allow the potential vendors of the reverse auction to bid on the reverse auction work separate from the claims adjudication work. If the cheapest option is to go with a vendor that can conduct the reverse auction and then subcontract out the claims adjudication work and save millions of dollars over the next potential vendor, why would we prohibit that in statute? Like, we want the same thing. We want to lower healthcare and pharmaceutical costs for our members, but what we do not want is to overpay to realize those savings. And the requirement for the technology vendor in this proposal would be a legislatively mandated expense for a non-care related product, paid for by assessing fees on the PBM. The PBM, of course, a non-care-related product to begin with, which is paid for through the insurance plan, another non-care-related product. If we continue to add layers of profitable bureaucracy between patients and their healthcare providers, the least we can do is to ensure as much competition as possible. Additionally, if this policy moves forward, it should not be permanent. Our contracts with PBMs are up to 5 years long, as you've heard. If this saves as much money as we think it could without negatively impacting continuity of care, the legislature can always extend the timeline in 2 years. It's much harder, as you know, to repeal things from statute than it is to extend them. So those are our two recommendations. Make this temporary for now and increase competition on the procurement of the reverse auction vendor. Thank you, Mr. Chair and committee members.
With that, members, that is the last person I have on my list of testifiers. We do have some other people that can maybe answer questions. So, members, I think we should open it up for discussion. Any questions that members have of anybody that has testified so far? It's interesting. Chair Kiffmeyer.
Thank you, Chair Nelson. I have a question for Mr. Bruce. And Mr. Bruce, my question for you is, currently the JLM works with MMB on some of these things. I don't know all the details, of course. How would you work with MMB? How would the JLM in this situation, from what I read on the language, there would be two, I think, appointees from two representatives to assist in the process. So how does that differ from how you currently work on these kinds of areas with MMB and the JLM? How would this be different, or would it be different?
Mr. Bruce, and I think, and if Ms. Arsenault wants to answer also, seeing as how she's the representative for the labor side of the JLM. Mr. Bruce.
Yep, and I'll, before passing it to Ms. Arsenault, Senator Kiffmeyer, I just wanted to clarify one thing, is that the language limiting it to currently two is a little bit different than how it currently operates. And we have, I know that you've had some conversations with some of the other proponents about trying to amend that language just to make it more analogous to what we currently have, to remove the number two, because we are a shared joint labor, joint management, even split for the JLM on health plans. So I'm going to turn it over to Ms. Arsenault if she would answer some of the technical aspects, because she's the co-chair.
Ms. Arsenault.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. The way the process works now is that when an RFP needs to go out to secure a vendor, it does come through the JLM in terms of an announcement that there's a contract is up or there's going to be a bidding process, and it allows for there's a formation of what they call an RFP committee. So there's an RFP committee that's formed with members of the labor side, and then obviously members of CGIP and sometimes representatives from certain agencies, depending on the expertise of agencies and what the RFP is for, and they form an RFP committee. The JLM itself just operates as kind of putting out a call in terms of our labor side and getting members of labor to volunteer for those committees. And just as Devin Bruce has indicated, the notion of just two people is not really how it works. It typically there's multiple representatives from labor, and then of course multiple representatives from CGIP side. But those processes are very much like the JLM works. Those committees review the RFP itself, and then they review the proposals that come in. There's usually a kind of an evaluation that is presented. They kind of have this scoring sheet, and those committees come to a consensus, and it works really very much like the JLM itself works, and that is by reaching a consensus. And then those committees, just as the JLM, make recommendations that then go to the state in terms of selecting a vendor. They make like a final recommendation. This is the vendor that they're recommending, and then to my knowledge, the state has always then selected the vendor that is the outcome of that process.
Chair Kiffmeyer.
Yeah, thank you, Mr. Chair. So, by the way, I am neutral in regards to two. What I wanted to do was be sure that it was balanced, and that's why I have these questions for Mr. Bruce. But question I have here for you, Ms. Arsenault, is usually when you're serving on something like an RFP committee, there are two things that are really important. One is that anybody who's going to serve on the RFP has no conflicts of interest, and that they need to declare that and make sure that they don't have any conflicts. The other one is signing a confidentiality statement that in order to be on the RFP committee, there has to be a confidentiality agreement. Is that currently part of the process, or would this be different in this particular case, considering Commissioner Showalter's comment and concern?
Ms. Arsenault.
Thank you, Chair. That is part of the process currently. And in fact, when members of the committee bring forward process what progress of what they're doing to the JLM, the JLM steering committee, they typically report to the JLM steering committee. They are always very careful not to provide any information. In fact, union members comment, you know, this is certain information is confidential. They're very careful in terms of how much information they provide back to the full JLM, right, in terms of progress of these committees and then ultimately, and we're never sort of given what the ultimate vendor selection is until that's at the point that it can be made public. So those processes are already being followed and honored. As in my years on JLM, I can say that particularly the union members, certainly the other side, they're very conscientious of those, of the confidentiality agreements that they're asked to agree to, and they adhere to those.
And Mr. Chair, and would you also respond to the no conflicts as well?
Sure. Ms. Arsenal.
Excuse me.
That's okay.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I'm sort of new to this whole process. yes, that is also part of the process. So we would ask our members, to honor whatever is being asked in terms of serving on a committee, on these joint committees. They know up front that they're going to be asked to sign an agreement, and they adhere to that.
Chair Kiffmeyer.
Thank you.
Chair Mason, you had a question. I see your hand up and you're muted. There you go.
I did. Thank you, Chair. It would be for Ms. Arsenault. In the letter that we received from IFO, there's this sentence in there that I guess I would like to ask you to really define. It says, when the legislation is signed into law, the state will have full control over the contract terms, and bidding PBMs will need to agree to those terms to earn Minnesota's business. Can you tell me how that signing the contract gives the state any more? If you would define that sentence, I'd appreciate it. Thank you.
Ms. Arsenault.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I don't have the letter in front of me, but as I'm recalling it based on what you read, I think that that's a reference to the fact that the way the process works now, when you put out the RFP and PBMs bid on it, they bid on it based on their own formulary. So they might have this formulary and offer this kind of deal on drugs versus the way I understand the reverse auction. When you put out the proposal for bidding, the state is determining what you want for formularies, right? What kind of drugs you want covered? When the PBMs bid, they have to bid based on the specification. So I think that sentence is referencing that process.
Okay, maybe a follow up.
Representative Mason.
Thank you, Chair. My understanding is that MMB can actually initiate this process without us passing the legislation. So is that still an accurate comment, do you believe?
Representative Mason, you want that to Ms. Arsenal, or do you?
Yes. Well, if there's somebody else who would like to answer that. But that would be my thought is, I know that, we've been told this MMB can go ahead and initiate this process without us passing any legislation. So is that control sentence the same? Does it mean the same thing?
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I guess I would ask, and this isn't my area of expertise in terms of what MMB can currently do. So perhaps somebody else could address this question.
Commissioner Showalter or Commissioner Roberts Davis?
Okay. I think the Teamsters also have that sentence in their letter to us. I didn't see anybody, I don't know if anybody's on board from that organization.
I don't see anybody on the list, and it looks like okay. Commissioner Showalter has dropped off.
Okay.
Mr. Bone.
Thank you, Mr. Chair.
And identify yourself for the record, please.
Yes, thank you. My name is Jonathan Bone. I represent the Interfaculty Organization as the Director of Public Affairs. And Representative Mason, I think what that sentence is trying to get at is, yes, perhaps it's possible, as the commissioner said, that there is the opportunity for MMB to do this process now. They haven't yet. And I think the legislation creates a really good framework for them to follow to do this process. It codifies on the House side the JLM's participation in that process moving forward. And yes, does the state have control right now to do this? I think they said they did. But if we follow the framework of the legislation, the state does have total control, and the unions, especially on the labor side, we get to play a role in developing what our members really need versus just reacting to proposals from PBMs. And I think that's what we're hoping to achieve, is that we can create this process, and whether it's overly prescriptive or not, I think the legislation creates the perfect framework to move forward, and that's what we're hoping to pass and why we support it.
Thank you.
Representative Mason. Representative Greenman.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And I just, as someone without a technology background, I just really appreciate this conversation and also the questions of some of our esteemed colleagues who have more of a technological background. So bear with me. But when I was particularly listening to you, Mr. Blum, about sort of the power of this technology to match some of what PBMs have in terms of big data. One of my questions, and I don't know if it's you, it may also be to Commissioner Showalter, is after we do this reverse auction process with this technology and settle on a contract, does this technology have the ability to help us hold the PBMs accountable and sort of make that contract work for workers throughout the terms of the contract? Is there sort of any advantage there as well?
Mr. Showalter, Commissioner Showalter. Did you hear the question?
A little bit. I'm sorry, Mr. Chair. Representative, could you repeat that real briefly? Thank you.
Yeah, and
Representative Greenman.
Thank you. Sorry, Mr. Chair. Really appreciate it. And I'd love to hear both from you, Commissioner Showalter, and from Mr. Blum, because as I was listening to this testimony, one of the questions I had, as we think about PBMs and sort of the big data world that they live in, was if this technology and this relationship that we would enter into would help us sort of hold PBMs accountable and sort of if there's benefit to the rest of the contract once we settle with a particular PBM, if that could help us sort of hold them accountable to the terms of the contract.
Commissioner Showalter.
Mr. Chair, members, Representative, that's a great question. You know, we're looking for the flexibility to make sure we get the best outcomes in the contract, and absolutely, you know, to the evaluation part, we want to make sure that we've got the ability to do that evaluation and assess. I thought Mr. Blum's conversation about doing the audits and how we may be needing to do regular check-ins is useful, and I'm sure my staff is already all over that. But those are the kinds of things we need to put into the contract. Those are the things that we need to do into our processes so that we're constantly assessing where we're at. I just want to echo that now this is our first opportunity to go at this kind of reverse auction with our PBMs. We're nearing that point where we can switch our vendor. We're going to learn. We're going to figure some of this stuff out and put it into place so that we can keep evaluating the progress.
Representative Greenman.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And I'd love to hear how it's worked in places like New Jersey and or the other states you said, New Hampshire, if there's experiences about sort of as we select the contract during the terms, how it could be helpful or not. I mean, I'd just love to hear what other states have experienced.
Redirecting that to Mr. Blum. You're muted, sir. There we go. You're muted again.
Doggone. There we are.
Okay.
That should be permanent. Thank you for the question. When you conduct the reverse auction, you're actually taking a software architecture and you're customizing it, you're programming it with the terms of the participant bidder agreement. Those are the granular terms of your best in class preferred contract. The state, MMB, to whatever process you define, is actually defining those terms, and those are programmed into the reverse auction. The criteria that you'll apply to selecting your winner, financial criteria as well as qualitative criteria, and the weights you would apply to each, those are also programmed into that architecture. And finally, the PBM, when it bids, the winning pricing offers of the PBM will be programmed into that architecture. So you've actually built a platform during the process of preparing for and conducting a reverse auction that is a real-time adjudication engine to use over the life of the contract. Every invoice that comes in can be adjudicated 100% of claims. As a matter of fact, each claim has multiple lines of data that determine the price at the point of purchase. Each of those lines in each of those claims can be adjudicated against the very granular terms of your contract, and flagging where the charge has deviated from the terms of your contract in real time. Real time meaning today the standard is within 1 hour. I believe that's in your legislation. I know that there's been talk about, could it be 6 hours? Sure, it could be 6 hours. The same technology could do it neither. So as you go along, the typical best-in-class contracts in both the private sector and in New Jersey, and both of theirs, it will, in New Hampshire's legislation, in the legislation that's moving forward right now towards enactment in Colorado, would allow reconciliation for overcharges on a quarterly basis. It could be done for each invoice, but a quarterly basis seems reasonable. Remember, you'll actually have the program that awarded the contract be used to show when there's been a deviation from the term of that contract. It was proposed earlier that maybe another vendor could do it. You could. Of course, you will have to rebuild that platform, repopulate it with the terms of the reverse auction. In essence, do the job twice. That's an option. But in essence, the short answer to your question is, yes, the reverse auction fully programmed in the course of, or the platform fully programmed in the course of the reverse auction is already an adjudication engine, which MMB can use on an ongoing basis to reconcile deviations or overcharges by your PBM. I should mention, we've never seen undercharges systematically from a PBM. Always the deviations in the aggregate are overcharges. Thank you.
Representative Greenman.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Just my one last question is, I'm wondering how that differs from how we're currently doing it with the traditional RFP process. I guess that's for Commissioner Showalter. And I know it might be complicated, so but just sort of that was where my brain went.
Commissioner Showalter or Commissioner Davis?
I'm going to need to get some help on the audit process. I believe we have somebody here at MMB who might be able to help me out on that.
I see from the administration we've got Kristen Batson, Lorna Smith, and Laura Lane on there for questions if needed.
Mr. Chair, if you would ask Ms. Smith, I think she could help us out with that.
Ms. Smith, and again, identify yourself for the tape before you start. Ms. Smith.
Good morning. I'm Lorna Smith. I work at MMB. I think the question has to do with our auditing. We currently we have just issued an RFP for an auditor, and it will be the traditional, likely the traditional audit on our PBM, but we also included the option, they have a platform vendor conduct an audit, and this will be a look back audit on the last 3 years of our PBM.
Representative Greenman.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, and thank you, Ms. So does that mean we're doing it sort of as the contract goes forward, or as we're doing the contract quarterly or bi-yearly, or just as a look back?
Ms. Smith.
Mr. Chair, Representative Greenman, this is going to be a look back, so it'll be a three-year period. We're a little, because we're kind of standing on the fence right now, we would like to do a platform vendor look back on our current PBM. I'm not sure that's going to be possible, so we've issued an RFP that looks for a platform and a traditional audit. But going forward, it is our intention to have a platform vendor audit. And I don't, we have not issued that RFP or finished that at all, so we don't know if it would be per claim, monthly, or quarterly. That is yet to be determined.
Chair Kiffmeyer.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. That was a very helpful question, Representative Greenman, that understanding the paper process and the length of time it takes to audit, that is significant because the greatest value comes from doing this more quickly. And what I hear with the reverse auction, and especially when you use the vendor that has the initial contract also be the one who audits, they already have it all programmed. It's built into the platform. So matching that up, I think, is really important. But I have a question for Mr. Bloom. Mr. Bloom, can you tell me about whether it's 1 hour or 6 hours, and how does that affect possible vendors that could reply to an RFP? And what might you think in the current language that restricts MMB from having qualitative factors considered? Kind of two questions there.
Mr. Bloom.
Glad to answer. Regarding 1 versus 6 hours, there's no difference. The leading platforms, there are two operating right now, currently in New Hampshire. Excuse me one moment. There are two different vendors operating right now in different stages of the contract life cycle. One doing the automated invoice review on an ongoing basis for a contract that's already been awarded. And in New Hampshire, another vendor who's currently conducting the reverse auction. So those are two of the 11 or so that have technical capability to conduct this process. All can do about 1 hour, 6 hours. There's really no difference here. Call it 6 hours. It's the same technology. The problem becomes if you can't meet a standard, we could move it out to 12 hours. Beyond 12 hours, you're not really using the technology that has the capability of doing the very complex algorithmic calculations. You're really dealing with spreadsheet type technology and humans doing calculations that takes a considerable point of time and makes it or amount of time and will make it impossible to do virtually real time adjudication of invoices. Your invoices come in typically every 2 weeks or every month, depending on your PBM contract. Do you want to do that calculation while the money is still in your treasury? Or do you want to pay out the bills and then try and reconcile 3 years later using a traditional auditing process? Mm-hmm. Or do you want to do the reconciliation right now and quarterly reconcile with your PBM? That's really what's at stake here. And whether you're talking about 1 or 6 or even 12 hours doesn't matter. But if you get beyond 12 hours, you're talking about waiting for 3 years for an audit versus doing it in real time.
Chair Kiffmeyer.
Yeah, thank you, Mr. Chair. That was really helpful, especially in light of the previous question on the, and I would totally agree with you. Most of us would say that's the case, that if you still have the money in your checkbook and you are contesting a billing, you're in a much stronger position than once it's been paid out and you're trying to get it back and deal with that, especially as time goes on, it makes that harder. So I appreciate the more real-time reconciliation. I think that is a very critical component of the reverse auction. The next one, though, Mr. Bloom, is what is the language or that you think, in your opinion, MMB is saying that the language currently would be restrictive to them and that they want to have qualitative factors considered. Is there anything in the current language that would touch that? Could you comment on that?
Yeah.
Mr. Bloom.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman, and thank you, Senator Kittmeyer, for the question. I've had a chance to look at your language. I think it's remarkable in the sense that it doesn't really describe the reverse auction process itself at all. In other words, I couldn't identify any restrictions. Where the current legislation is specific is the minimum standards that the technology must have. In terms of security, an issue that was discussed here later, that pretty high standards of data security, SOC 2 and NIST security standards, those are what you would expect in technology that's handling PHI, for example. That's specific. The ability to be able to do the calculations in 1 hour, that's specific. And it's actually required if you're going to have real-time bill review, or actually conduct a dynamic auction rather than a series of traditional RFPs. If you're going to run a round of bidding at least every 2 weeks or faster, you've got to be able to run those, calculate the cost of those bids in real time. So there's some specificity regarding the minimum technical requirements for the technology platform to do the job. But in terms of how you run the auction, there is very little specificity. Typically in a reverse auction, there'll be a ranking by the quantitative value of the bids. That is a projection what the bids will actually cost the state. And those will be done in a very short period of time, 1 hour in your legislation. That's a standard for the leading platforms today. But qualitative factors are typically calculated also. The difference is that the qualitative considerations, the non-monetary considerations, for example, network adequacy, have to be defined transparently in the beginning. What are the qualitative factors? Not our opinions after the bids have been made, but what are the qualitative considerations up front? Assign a weight to those qualifications so they can be calculated in the algorithm. And at the end of reports produced, which will show financial rankings, but also rankings considering the specific qualitative considerations that commissioner indicated are of concern, those are built into the process. There's nothing that excludes those in the legislation. In summary, there is great flexibility in defining the contract terms you want rather than choosing between the terms the PBMs propose. There is great flexibility in deciding what qualitative factors you want to consider in addition to the strict financial factors. Those are all incorporated in the best-in-class terms, but they're done publicly, that is transparently, so that all bidders have a level playing field to participate in the reverse auction. And your final round of bidding, the selection committee will look at the rankings on financial and the qualitative non-financial factors, how they were incorporated in the algorithm, and then exercise its judgment on which one to pick. What can't be introduced at the end, however, are new terms, new criteria for selection. The court in New Jersey, at least, found that that violates the fairness of the process itself. You can't negotiate for new terms after all the bidders have made bids, understanding the terms up front, both quantitative and qualitative.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Yeah, thank you, Mr. Chair. Boy, what a really good conversation we're having here. And I think it leads me to one other thing, as we've talked about this, and one of the concerns that was raised is the number of vendors. So again, I'm referencing our current language, side-by-side language of the House and Senate under that current language. You're mentioning 11 vendors, so, and you've mentioned leading vendors. So under our current language, what kind of vendor response might you think we would have? I know that's an estimate or so in our judgment, but nonetheless, if you could respond to that.
Mr. Bloom.
Certainly, of the list of 11 that I'm looking at right now that have been vetted, and I just want to correct the record, in the first reverse auction, there were scores of vendors who responded in New Jersey. One of them was selected and then, you know, did a pretty impressive job. In the second reverse auction, the state of New Jersey ran the bid on the federal government Office of Government Services platform. I have no insights, but I heard it reported that only one responded. That may be true. I have no knowledge of that. But I do know in the first reverse auction, which was done, there were scores of vendors who responded. Of the 11 here, all have capability of doing it. I know that in the New Hampshire bid, there were multiple vendors. I don't know how many, but a different vendor was selected than New Jersey's. So today there are two states in different stages of reverse auction. Each is using a different vendor. So I know that you will see competition. You'll see multiple vendors responding. I can't opine whether there'll be two or six or 12. I just don't know.
Senator Kiffmeyer.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, and thank you, Mr. Bloom.
Mr. Bloom, I don't know if you've shared that list of 11 vendors with the advocates or with the administration.
I'll be happy to.
If you can do that, that would be great. If we could get that list of those vendors that could be looked at, and then we can. So we're talking the same apples and apples and not apples to oranges or apples to avocados.
Happy to do that, Mr. Chairman. Thank you.
Any further questions, members? Representative Howard, if you want to wrap up with any final statement, and I understand that you and Senator Benson are continuing to work on this to try and make sure we get the best, we get this set up properly the first time so we don't have as has been mentioned here, other kerfuffles that we've had and with different things. And that's my concern, is that this is something big and new that we've done some reverse auctions before, but this is something new, and I don't want to set something in motion that leads us down to a trap where we fail. I want to make sure this is going to work and work the way it's intended. Mr. Howard.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, and I really appreciate the conversation we've had today, and that we're at the high level saying the same things, that we want to create a system that delivers the best results for Minnesotans, for over 100,000 Minnesotans, to help reduce their prescription drug costs and to hold PBMs accountable. Just a few comments just based on the discussion and some of the testimony. Despite the fact that the House and Senate passed nearly identical language, we have worked with MMB and have continued to have conversations and have presented language to them that responds and makes to several of their considerations, not all, but several. And to this conversation about specificity, I just wanted to comment. The flexibility in this bill is where it's needed most, as folks have testified. The state has the ability and flexibility to build a contract, build a best-in-class contract that is going to deliver the best result for Minnesotans. That's where we want to make sure we have flexibility. We also want to make sure that we're having the best possible technology utilized to come to bear for Minnesotans. And that's where there is some specifics, really setting some baseline specificity for the vendor that we want to use in this process. And I kind of liken it to, we don't want to put Minnesotans into a beater that we take off the lot that goes down the road a couple miles and then clunks out as my 1992 Pontiac Grand Am did in high school. We want to put Minnesotans in a fully loaded, all the specs possible, the best technology, the safest car, you know, your JD Power and Associates well rated. We want to get the best possible technology in this platform. And that's why having some specificity makes sense. We as a legislature want to pass the best bill possible, and we have a role to set that in legislation versus just sort of leaving that up for chance. We have that ability, and we aren't pulling those things out of thin air. We're basing them based on the experience in other states where these metrics have worked to deliver for people. And so that's why this legislation makes sense. And we want to continue to have conversations and hopefully move forward. The one other point I would make that isn't in this bill, but MMB has talked about and we've talked about and agree, we should have some sort of report. We want to assess whether we've met the mark, whether we've delivered for Minnesotans. That makes sense. That is data that we can use as a legislature to decide if we do need to make changes or come back, if for some reason we're an outlier based on what other states have seen. But I just think the balance of this conversation the potential benefits to step forward, to be innovative for Minnesotans, lends credence to us together moving forward with this bipartisan proposal, and I hope we can do so this session.
Thank you, Mr. Howard. Representative Howard, any further questions of anybody or further comments from the members? If not, Chair Kiffmeyer.
Yeah.
Our next meeting, Chair Kiffmeyer.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. By the way, I was just getting ready actually to just make a comment about the PBMs because I really wanted to be sure that the commissioner's concerns were addressed. And I think that Mr. Blum's answers in regards to the number of vendors, confidentiality, flexibility, matter of fact, that the reverse auction actually empowers MMB's flexibility in regards to this. And then saves in regards to the, instead of the onerous way of paper auditing long after the fact. So I think some of those concerns, which I took very seriously with the commissioner, I think have been addressed. And so I really, really appreciate the testifiers and all of that. But the committee hearing tomorrow is scheduled at this time, at the same time. The agenda will be determined, to be determined. We will continue working today in a variety of areas, and if something is actionable, we'll give notice in regards to that and post documents as soon as possible, if that is possible. But other than that, because of that, we're going to keep the agenda open. And then also, Mr. Chair, in regards to our ongoing conversations that have been very helpful, ongoing with that as well. But with that, I hope that we'll give enough information. Glad to answer any questions if needed.
Thank you. Something just popped up on my screen there. Thank you, Chair Kiffmeyer and members. We continue to work on this. I know we've in our side-by-sides, we have gone through and we basically, I think, got agreement on the majority of the same and similars, and I think now the task is the heavy lifting is to get into the things where we have differences and try and work those out. I think on our next meetings will probably be consumed a little bit with that, going through the side-by-sides where we haven't agreed on language that's in there and see whether we wanted to go in and have some discussions about that. So members, look forward to the next couple of days. Hopefully we can get targets soon. And if we get targets soon, we could wrap this up quickly and send this bill on to the House floor and the Senate floor and then to the governor's desk. So members, any final questions from any of the members of the conference committee or comments? If not, with that, members, we are adjourned.